Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh, now, here's Jim Coyle.
Everybody, welcome in. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call, down in Evansville, up in the region, on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. You've already got it in the right spot. Leave it locked right there all day throughout your travels. If you're following along on social media, you know the drill. Like, subscribe buttons. Thank you very much. It's a great benefit to us. We appreciate you so much. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday as we creep into the week. Week three of the college football season coming up. We just completed week one of the NFL season, and another great game last night as the Bears give up a win. The Vikings come back and knock off the Bears 27-24. J.J. McCarthy had a great night. Comeback win in his NFL debut. Lots of fun stuff going on in the NFL, man. Close games, it's always fun, and it's good that you don't see these 70-0 games like we do in college. You don't have to worry about that. So we got all kinds of good stuff going on the program today. Mike DeCourcy is back after a hiatus, been on vacation, and I think we had a holiday, just all kinds of stuff. Coach Griff is back with us today as well. And later in the week, by the way, Indiana Athletics Director Scott Dolson will be with us. So we're moving some things around this week. Looking forward to that. The AP Top 25 is out. The Big Ten, very, very heavy at the top. They've got 1, 2, 4, 3 out of the top four in the AP poll, but only three more teams after that. The Illini are at number 9. So Indiana will have a top 10 matchup on prime time, as that was announced yesterday, that the Illinois-Indiana game next week will be at 7:30 at Memorial Stadium here in Bloomington, as the number 22 ranked by the AP poll, number 19 in the coaches poll, Indiana, will take on number 9, Illinois, who's 9 in both polls. Michigan, the other Big Ten team, dropped to the 23rd spot. The SEC had a record 11 teams in this week's AP poll. Man, that is going to make things... That's not going to leave a lot of room when it comes time to for the college football playoffs. So, SEC doing a hell of a job in basketball and football in just leveling their entire conference. And the Big Ten is going to have to follow suit. Now, I think USC is going to be a team that comes up. A lot of this has to do with how people were viewed from last year, because you have these polls that start before the season starts, which nobody has a stinking clue how good someone's going to be. I'll be right now. My opinion, which doesn't mean anything, I think Oregon might be the best team in the Big Ten as well as in the country right now. I don't know that Ohio State nor Penn State is better than Oregon. But I don't know for a fact that they're not. But my opinion right now would be Oregon. And I saw somebody engaging one of the voters yesterday and asking some questions. And I think one of the questions was, how can you put Illinois ahead of Oklahoma or Florida State? And the response was, well, Oklahoma wasn't in my preseason poll. And I'm like, what the hell does that have to do with it? These people like that, I don't understand. It's if just because you had them in, that doesn't mean squat. He's saying that, well, they have to climb the ladder. No, just put the teams in where they should be, period. Not where you thought they were, and you're making them climb ladders to get to another level. That's just dumb. It's just like when you'd see a game and somebody loses, and you expect this to happen and that happen, and it doesn't. It's like, why? That team's better. How can you have them ranked ahead of them? Is what it is. So we'll see that. Brian says September 27th, Oregon goes to Penn State. There you go. That's going to be an interesting game for certain. Oregon having to go on the road. Indiana has the Ducks the week after, and luckily for Indiana, they have a bye in between Iowa and Oregon, those road games. So that will help out some. If Indiana can beat the Illini, I wonder, though, how much of a jump will they be given? It's kind of exactly what I was just talking about. Some people that vote in the polls they have just their way of doing things. I'm not sure that it always makes sense, but at the end of the day, I don't know that it matters, because the College Football Playoff Committee, they wait like 10 weeks until their first poll comes out. And I'm sure that there's no way that these polls are not bringing some kind of perception into their minds, but it is what it is. And at least they do that. So it's like the Heisman. Heisman Trophy poll out right now. That this is just a poll. At the top, from On Three, John Battier from Oklahoma went 21 of 34, 270 yards, a touchdown, an interception, 19 carries for 74 yards, 2 touchdowns. Battier notched the biggest win of the week, scoring a ranked victory over a very good Michigan squad. Battier was clearly the difference in the contest. Okay, does that make him a Heisman winner? Tommy Castellanos from Florida State, 8 of 11, 237, 3 touchdowns. Hey, man, Florida State has really rallied, so there's a reason for that. I don't mind thinking that he could be a potential. Garrett Neusmeyer from LSU. LSU's looking pretty strong. The win over Clemson, not looking quite as strong, but we'll see. Carson Beck from Miami is noticed. Lenora Sellers from South Carolina. Caleb Downs from Ohio State. Dante Moore from Oregon. We'll see how this season continues and who does what. Reuben Bain at Miami, a defensive lineman. Yeah, come on, that's not going to happen. Others receiving Heisman Trophy votes. Now, I don't know if this poll is from Heisman voters or not. Looking down through here, just a vote here and there for lots of different guys. We'll see. We'll see. It's a long, long way into the season. UNLV's quarterback already missing the remainder of the season with a hamstring issue. Man, that's got to be tough to lose your QB right off the bat. Billy Smith, we got to get Cabro back on. He's back in a must-win situation. And what's the deal with all the spitting going on? We just had it happen in, was it Javon Carter in the NFL, and then had another, this happened in a Florida game. I think that kind of went in and affected that game scenario. But what the hell? That is just something that does not, that never, I've been angry. Trust me. I've been angry in sports, and spitting was not something that came to my mind. I mean, shoving, grabbing, all kinds of other stuff, but not spitting. I don't understand that. I just find that so disgusting and gutless to do. Is what it is. Caleb points out Tennessee jumped 7 spots by beating an FCS. So Georgia and Tennessee is a top 15 matchup now. Yeah, there you go. ESPN, they've got some, I guess they've got some sweat. No. Hey, man, these are all individual voters around the country. So it is what it is. Jason says in hockey, that guy would get his head beat in. It's disgusting, period. And I just don't understand how that comes to your mind. It's like the last resort when you can't do something else. But, wow. Hey, we're going to go ahead and take a pause for the cause. Our friend Mike DeCourcy will join us. Back with plenty more here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this beautiful Tuesday. Back right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Tuesday. And that means a visit from our good friend Mike DeCourcy, who looks, I can tell you're traveling already still. How are you doing? Welcome back. First of all, I hope you're refreshed and had some enjoyable time to spend with the wife and everything else that may have gone on.
Well, this is not a suntan. It's just I can't get the lighting right in my hotel room. although I did spend plenty of days on the beach in Florida, I was covered by sunscreen and an umbrella, but I had a nice relaxing vacation and jumped right back into football season and soccer as soon as I returned.
Soccer. Yeah, Indiana rolling this year. With I think they've tied Clemson so far. They just beat Notre Dame. I think they're ranked up number 3 right now. So I have to be thoroughly impressed by the job that Todd Yeagley is continuing to do, because now he's navigated into a whole new era of college athletics, and they haven't missed a beat. And the funny thing is, a good portion of though his players come from this region. They're not coming in from Macedonia and Mars and God knows wherever else, like Marshall did. These are just the same core guys, and that's just so impressive to me.
He's doing a phenomenal job. I happen to live in Mars, and I don't think that we're known for producing great soccer players, but he is having much more success this season than the United States men's national team as they prepare for the 2026 World Cup. I am in Columbus getting ready for tonight's second friendly in this window. They played South Korea on Saturday and played pretty poorly. And the coach, Mauricio Pochettino, who was a very successful coach on the club level, and this is his first national team experience, is having a really rough time transitioning both himself to the national team level and trying to carry the U.S. into a relatively new era in a very short period of time. And he's starting to feel a lot of heat. And although he did it with a smile, Jim, I don't think I've ever seen a press conference quite like the one I sat through yesterday at the Columbus Crew training facility in north of the downtown area, wherein Pochettino sat there and smiled and had this cheery look on his face, but his words were seething in terms of how he's been criticized. I've never seen anything like it. When you see coaches get mad, like when Mike Gundy got mad, I'm a man, I'm 40. Like he was, you could tell he was mad, right? But Pochettino.
If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me.
Yeah, you're not 40 anymore. That clip's got a little age on it, but it's still a goodie. It's an oldie but a goodie. I've got several that I keep on hand just for that, and that is one of those, man.
I've got to tell you, this thing I sat through yesterday, I have never seen anything like it. Because if you were sitting there and you weren't listening, you thought he was as happy as a coach could be. But underneath it all, he kept finding ways to get back to attacking or countering his critics. And it was really, I've never seen anything quite like it. He is different, but they have lost 7 consecutive games to top 30 opponents now. In the time I've followed the team, in the time that I've covered the team, I've covered them now for the last dozen years or so, I've never seen anything like it. And so I think they need to start winning soon, or they're going to have some conversations. But it's almost like he is setting it himself up to fail, Jim, so that if he put the main lineup out on the field. And they lost, then there's a problem because you're losing with the main lineup. But so he's got guys out there. Saturday, he started a central defender, one of the most important positions on the field in making sure you don't give up goals, who had never played before and is 29 years old. Like, the odds of a 29-year-old player turning into a World Cup level performer in 8 months are about the odds of me sitting down between now and the end of the year and writing the next War and Peace. But he was doing it. And that player ended up being at fault on the first goal and was not blameless on the second that South Korea scored. And so it's a really fascinating dichotomy. And like I said, we've got 8 months, I believe, 9 months tops between now and when the first ball is kicked next June 12th in Los Angeles with the United States playing somebody. It's really become an interesting dynamic around the national team in advance of what will be the biggest sporting event this country has ever seen. It will be bigger than the Olympics have been in the past, and it'll be bigger than the Olympics will be in 28. The number of people that will go through the turnstiles and be focused on this country in that period of time, that 1 month. Right now, it does not look good for the United States national team heading into that.
And that continues to amaze me that the U.S. can't. It's not. I know that it's not that they don't have the athletes. It that's crazy at this stage of life, athletic ability. So it's, what is it that is preventing the U.S. from gaining ground and being a player at the top on the men's side? Women have done it, but I think that women in this country are very fortunate in that you've got Title IX, you've got all the things that have made sure or tried to make sure that they're going to get a better shake at things, where most countries don't have that. Hell, there are some of those countries that treat women like, well, we know what, which is unbelievably wrong. But on the men's side, it just amazes me that they're not in, the U.S. is in the Champions League, and they will have never, it seems like they've never gotten to the Premier League of men's soccer, if that makes sense. Am I making a good analogy in soccer, man?
I think that you meant the championship, not the Champions League. The championship.
You know, there's all those
trying to help.
Leagues I try to keep straight. In the Premier, the top league.
Yes, and the championship is the second league in England. The Champions League is the biggest league in Europe. All the best teams from Italy, Spain, England, France, etc. Will play in the Champions League all across Europe, and that will start, I believe, early next month. And so it's not national teams that go to that. It's club teams, as is the case with the Premier League. But I like that Fred saying I'm in witness protection. I tried to get the lighting right. It's just maybe if I close the drapes, maybe I need to do that. We'll try that during the commercial break. But anyway, what the problem has been, honestly, Jim, is that whereas the U.S. women were ahead of the game because of Title IX, you had the U.S. women starting to play the sport at a time when in other countries it was almost forbidden. And in some countries, obviously, it still is forbidden. But in some of the industrialized nations, it was still borderline forbidden for women to play. And meanwhile, you have the United States encouraging women to participate, and that helped them get started. And an incredible generation of athletes, Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, et cetera, set this phenomenal example that young women wanted to follow. And we wound up seeing Abby Wambach and Carly Lloyd, et cetera, all the way up to the present day with the great talents they have now. In the men's side, it is different, because if you grow up in England and you're an athlete, like the first sport you're going to play is soccer, football, as they call it. Here, it might not be a sport that you're ever even introduced to. I mean, when I talk about what's held this back, you know, like a lot of people will immediately say, well, LeBron James might not have been a great soccer player, and he might not have been. And Aaron Rodgers might not have been a great soccer player, and he might not have been. But the great soccer player might be somebody's backup quarterback in Division II football who never kicked a ball. You just don't know, because in England, he would have done it. And here, he might never be introduced to the possibility of doing it. And that's a problem. And trying to get the sport out to more people, more outreach, is something that I think that U.S. soccer needs to continue to expand upon. Getting it to more people. And that's at the lower income levels, and that's at the upper income levels. Everybody needs to play it if you're going to get the best of the best. And right now, that's not the case. As I said, a lot of young people never even kick the soccer ball ever. So that's, you know, that's what the U.S. the biggest obstacle is, and then the obstacles to continue to grow from there. Some of them have been knocked down or knocked back. Major League Soccer has done a good job of building up an academy system so that players can be introduced to high level soccer. Sometimes, you know, a lot of younger players get knocked back by the cost of playing the sport. That's a problem in a lot of American sports now. Baseball, hockey, it costs a lot to play the sport at a higher level for youth athletes. And soccer is right there. You'd think it would be a sport that would be inexpensive. All you need is a ball and a pair of shorts. And unfortunately, it's not the case in soccer because of the expensive coaching and training and all the rest of that. That in too many cases at the younger levels is not covered. If you're good enough at a youth level, by the time you're 12, 13, 14, Major League Soccer academies might see you, and then you're expenses might be covered. But getting to that point is the hard part.
Yeah, I guess that will continue to be a struggle as the U.S. tries to find that spot. Looking at college, not just college sports here of late, started in the pros, what the hell is the deal with the spitting? Oh. I have never understood it. I talked in the opening of the show. I was an athlete. There were times where I was pissed. That is never something that ever came to my mind. Shoving somebody, grabbing them by the face mask, pushing them, swinging. There's a thousand things that reaction. Spitting is just not something that comes to my mind. And it's not as we don't see it a lot, but we see it enough that it makes me think, what the hell? Why are you spitting on somebody? Because it's one of the most disgusting things on the earth to do. And I don't get it. Every time it happens, I want to send the latest we had, was it Javon Carter that did it? In the NFL, it started like a week ago.
Jalen
Carter. Then Florida defensive tackle Brendan Bett. I want to sincerely apologize for my actions and blah, blah. Of course, everybody's going to apologize after you spit on somebody. But what in the hell's in your mind that this? I don't understand that thought coming to your head.
I don't understand it either. And I will tell you that I haven't seen yet the punishment that administered that would discourage others from doing it. Let's not forget, this happened twice in 3 days. Carter's was a Thursday night game that opened the NFL season before they even, like, the worst part about the Carter
is
they hadn't even played yet. Like, they walked out on the field. Nobody had done anything to anyone that would rise to the level of that sort of frustration. And it had happened before they even played a play from scrimmage. Just a kickoff.
And I didn't read how, Mike, but I was quickly reading something at one point, and someone made a comment. He was goaded into it. And I'm like, well, how the hell was he goaded into it? They hadn't even done anything yet.
Right.
They're just walking onto the field for the first offensive and defensive play of the game. So I don't know. It's
and the second one was in some ways worse because at that point in the game, even if lots of things had happened to rise to that level of frustration, Florida was protecting a lead and trying to get a stop against South Florida. And if Florida gets that stop, they win the game. And instead, you have the spitting incident, a Florida player against South Florida, and a 15-yard penalty, and all of a sudden, South Florida gets the points necessary to win the game. So really, in both cases, inexplicably egregious and need to be punished at a level that we won't see this again in what is America's sport. We don't need to see this again in any football game. I don't think we've seen it until what happened on Thursday. I don't remember anything like it since a baseball incident that happened in the 90s. I mean, that's how long I remember in my memory that we've gone between athletes spitting at others. In the case of the baseball incident, as I recall, it was a player spitting at an umpire. It was not an opponent. Still
that's
awful.
Even that's the worst yet.
Yeah.
That's really going to get you something.
But at the same time, it absolutely should not ever happen on the field of play. And what Jalen Carter needs to be appropriately punished without a doubt. Brendan Bett needs to be appropriately punished. I don't think that a 15-yard penalty covered it. I don't think the ejection of Carter before he played a snap covered it. I think that there needs to be much greater punishment for both of them. Obviously, it's different for a professional than for a collegiate in terms of what the consequences are, because in one case it could be significant financially. But in both cases, they need to be out competitively for a substantial period, in my estimation.
Yeah, Billy Napier, Florida coach Billy Napier, said during his presser yesterday that there would be some internal discipline, but he had not decided whether he would suspend Betts for Saturday's game at LSU. Of course, if it was against Joe Billy Bob University, I don't think that there would have been a discussion, but it's against LSU. We right. need him. We need
him. And that's why it shouldn't be up to him. It should be up to the Southeastern Conference.
The greatest spitting incident ever is being referenced by Brian in the Seinfeld, the magic,
the loogie, loogie yes. that yes.
The magic loogie.
Yes. When the Michigan circumstance was happening a couple of years back, the Big Ten took the authority to issue punishments before the NCAA was able to act. And then you saw subsequent penalties this past summer issued to Michigan by the NCAA. The SEC should be stepping in here and not allowing Florida to dictate the discipline on this. If Florida had come out immediately and said, okay, we're doing this, two games, three games, whatever, okay, then good. We're good. The SEC doesn't need to step in. But the tap dance that's happening now says, no, you've lost your authority. It should be the Southeastern Conference that says what's what.
Well, your favorite sport, soccer, Inter Miami's Luis Suarez suspended for six Leagues Cup matches after spinning incident. I think that his came first. When I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I'd forgotten about that, but that one happened about 10 days ago.
But that's a six game. That is a worthy punishment.
The problem, what ends up happening, Jim, though, is the Leagues Cup is a once every season event, and there's a chance that Luis Suarez will never play another Leagues Cup match. I mean, because we don't know whether he's going to return next year. I don't know what his contract status is. I don't know whether he wants to continue to play in MLS. I don't know. So there's a slight chance he wouldn't have played anyway. He only got suspended for three games by Major League Soccer. It looks like a lot. I think that it should have been – I think he should have been suspended for the remainder of at least the regular season by MLS. I thought they used the crutch provided by CONCACAF the nation's Leagues Cup construction, not CONCACAF, the Leagues Cup construction to say, okay, well, he got suspended plenty, so we don't have to do more. I think that was a crutch. It should have been the remainder of the regular season. Three games is not enough for what he did, especially for someone who once bit an opponent in a World Cup game.
Something else that should be happening now in, well, not just professional leagues, because I know they do this a lot, but in college, financial fines. There are only certain things where you could probably do this, and this would be one of them, but this would be a place where you could levy a substantial fine on a player with a percentage of finding out what their NIL is. I don't know. That's a whole other deal, but it's ridiculous and it needs to stop. We've got to take a break. The great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is with us and back. More to talk about the college football week three coming up. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. On this Tuesday, Jim Coyle with you, Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, all brightened up with that beautiful pink shirt on. Joined us now. Appreciate you no matter where or how you're listening on this Tuesday as we have hit not quite the midway point of the week, but man, this weather has been absolutely fantastic, and I hope it just stays this way as I'm looking down through here. We're going to get warmer toward next Sunday and Monday up in the upper 80s. But you know what? Who cares? Next Saturday, as a matter of fact. Let's see. No, that's this Friday. It's going to be 86, so that's not far enough out. Indiana and Illinois, a top 10 matchup with the Illini, as they are now ranked ninth in the AP and coaches polls. Indiana, number 19 in the coaches poll, number 22 in the AP poll. So and that game has been moved to prime time, Mike. It'll be 7:30 on NBC. I was certain that that was going to be one of the dreaded Fox Big Noon kickoff games, which only that I don't like about it. I'm not a fan of the early games, but the Big Ten does not have enough games in prime time, in my opinion. And prime time, they don't have enough night games. They play most of their games during the day. I know Ohio State fans, absolutely, they would throw rocks at people over the noon game. They hate the noon game because they get stuck with it a lot, I think, because of Fox. But a great opportunity for Indiana in a number of ways, mostly because they're being undervalued right now, I think. Illinois is riding high on a great season last year, and they followed that up so far with a great start. This should be a heck of a contest and a great week four matchup.
Well, I'm going to defend the noon games. I love the noon games.
They're great about – you do get home a hell of a lot earlier.
That's what, yeah. Hey, it's great for the newspaper people who have those early deadlines. I covered a zillion Penn State games that started at 1 o'clock. So what's another hour?
Yeah,
earlier. I like all the starting times. The night games are fun because you get everybody amped up and everything, especially on a Saturday because you have Sunday to recover, so to speak. I like them all. The 3:30 games are cool because. You get a chance to get warmed up watching the early game. And then, newspapers still are out there. And the deadlines are faster than ever. So I guess everybody's always on a deadline, no matter when they start their game. But I think it's really cool for Indiana and Illinois to get that prime spot because it says a little bit about what you've been talking about, Jim, now for a year and a half. About the democratization, so to speak, of college football power. It's obviously Ohio State and Michigan and programs like that are still mighty powerful, but they're not the only ones any longer. You see a lot of programs in a lot of circumstances that are now exercising some sort of might. And so Illinois and Indiana, both teams that were expected coming into this year to be significant, and we don't know yet that they will be by the end of the year, but one of them will take a huge step toward that by winning next Saturday night.
Indiana, it's a must-win game for Indiana, and I don't care what anybody says because of what lies ahead for them, especially the two games immediately following the Illinois game. They go to Iowa the next week. But then they have a bye, but then they have to go to Oregon. I personally think Oregon might be the number one team in the country. We'll have to wait to see all that play out. But, yeah, this Illinois has an un – you want to talk about schedules? Illinois might have the easiest schedule in the Big Ten. I don't care what anybody says. Here is what – see, now they played Duke on the road, so I'll give them credit for that. And they opened up with Western Illinois, and then they'll play Western Michigan next week. Then the Hoosiers. Then USC comes into Illinois. That's the USC has looked really good. But then they go to Purdue. They do play Ohio State. Washington, I'm changing my tune a little bit. Washington has looked a lot better than I expected. Rutgers, nothing. Maryland. I can't believe Maryland is looking as good as they are with losing their quarterback, who is now the quarterback at Wisconsin, and their all Big Ten running back, who is at Indiana. Then they go to Wisconsin, and they have Northwestern. So, it's gotten a little tougher.
And there is an Ohio State in there. Don't forget that.
The thing is,
I know you mentioned it, but I think it's
early on. My opinion was because I'm like, I wasn't expecting much from Washington. Well, they're looking a lot better than I expected them to be. And Maryland's looking better, but that's a home game. Now that trip out to Washington, that's a trick. There you go right there. I think that's going to be a, a trickier game than I ever anticipated it was going to be. The USC game's going to be tough, but USC has to travel back this way, and I think their game coming maybe this week. I'll have to look. Is back this way. They've got to do some traveling. Let's see, what week three? They go to Purdue on September 13th. I'm losing my dates. That's next week, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that's
this Saturday. That's Saturday. Yeah. They have to go to Purdue. Purdue has looked better. Here's a stat that's going to blow. If this doesn't blow your mind, I don't know what. All right. Barry Odom, the new Purdue coach, has Purdue at 2-0. They won their opening two non-con games. First Purdue coach to start 2-0 since the 60s.
Oh, wow.
How is that even possible? Jeff Brohm, Joe Tiller, the great teams they had, the great quarterbacks they've had. This is a program that's had Bob Greasy and all these other great quarterbacks.
It helps to start with Ball State and Southern Illinois.
I get that, but it just seems like that would have occurred at some other time in the last 1,000 years of their football program, but apparently it's not, because they've had some successful runs.
I don't think they're saying that they've never been 2-0. I think they're saying that it's the first year coach.
That still amazes me.
Yeah.
It's Barry Odom's first year at Purdue.
So I think that's what they're saying.
It still amazes me, but it is what it is. But Purdue is going to be a lot better this year. But the SEC lands 11 teams, while the Big Ten has got the top lockdown with 3 out of the top 4 in the AP poll, the SEC gets 11 teams in. Man, they are coming like gangbusters, like they did in basketball. And boy, when it comes time for the CFP, Greg Sankey's going to be sitting back, just pushing up the teams.
Well, I'm sure he will. I mean, that's his job, to advocate for his teams. But remember, like, 11 teams in the top 25 doesn't mean anything.
Because
we could have been in that same position, and I'm not going to go back and look because I don't care that much, a year ago, but some of those teams weren't. I mean, when you've got Florida losing to South Florida, you have to wonder. I mean, is your league that great? It may be, but it hasn't established that of yet. I think that some of their better teams have won some significant games. Oklahoma handling Michigan in the way that they did on Saturday, and their quarterback looked terrific. We saw LSU go to Clemson and win. And that was an enormous win, not just for the Tigers and Brian Kelly, but also for the league as a whole. But there's still a lot of football to be played. And do I think that they're going to get a bunch of bids? Yeah, because I thought last year was somewhat of an aberration, that the struggle for them to get extra bids was more the exception than the norm. But I'm not going to sit here and say that because they got 11 teams in the top 25. They had 10 to start, and then they kind of underperformed in week one, and now we got 11 in week three. Really? Have they done that? I'm not sure I'm willing to go there. I think that a lot of that is reputation and not necessarily performance.
Yeah, I don't like the early season polls, but it sells. It gets people talking, and that's what the main part of it is. Just like right now with a Heisman poll that I saw come out from On Three. I'm like, dude, we've had 2 weeks of teams playing nobodies for the most part. I don't care what anybody does right now. Let's get 5 weeks in, get some consistency, get some big wins, some big upsets, and all of that. And then we'll talk that. Pile some numbers up first. But this does seem to be an open year for the Heisman right now, because a lot of times we've got the favorite going in, and we don't have that right now.
Yeah, well, in a lot of years, you kind of have a good feeling about who it will be, because that particular player is so gifted, and all they have to do is have their typical year and that player will win. And in other years, you have somebody come out like a Barry Sanders, who had been a backup for 2 years and then put out one of the greatest seasons in the history of college football. So you don't ever know for sure. And you can suspect that a particular player, and now you can wager on it with your phone in most American states. All you have to do is grab your phone and sign up for one of the services, and you can wager on who you think will win the Heisman Trophy. But this is a year in which there are no obvious dominant players, and whoever is going to win it will have to emerge.
Yeah, and looking at this current poll that I'm looking at number one, they've got John Battier from Oklahoma. They list his weekend stats. 21 of 34 for 270 yards, a TD and an interception, 19 carries for 74 yards and two TDs. That's nice. I mean, that's a good deal. But is that Heisman worthy? No. But here's the thing that aggravates me, because where's the line? Mateer notched the biggest win of the week. Stop. I don't care if they win or lose. I care about the individual performance of the individual. It goes back to, there's only been one Heisman winner off of a losing team ever, 56, Paul Hornung from Notre Dame. The closest to come to that, Anthony Thompson, back in 89, when he finished one of the closest runner-ups to Ware from Houston. But I truly believe he lost that Heisman because Indiana missed a chip field goal in the Purdue game to win against Purdue and ended up with a losing record. And people have, the voters have this deal that, well, you can't win. What the hell? They're playing Ohio State, but yet getting 300 yards against Michigan should override that stuff, in my opinion, but it doesn't. So I don't care it's not that I don't care what their teams do, but that is not the end all be all of what they're doing. You can look at Walter Payton back when he was Walter Payton on the Bears that sucked. He was still Walter Payton.
Yes. Well, the Heisman Trophy is not an MVP award, but it's treated as if it were one.
It is now.
By the majority of voters, based on not by what conversations with them, but by what they do. A great example of this, I think it was 2002. It was a very average, talented quarterback named Jason White at Oklahoma. Oklahoma, I believe, went undefeated that year. Pitt had Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald went out on a good but not great Pitt team. I think they finished 9-3 and did Larry Fitzgerald things for 12 games. But it didn't matter because he wasn't on the best team. So Jason White, who was never a great player, even a great college player, Jim. I mean, he did nothing extraordinarily. He did not have a great arm. He did not have great feet. He just didn't make mistakes. He put the ball where it was supposed to be, and Oklahoma was terrific. Now, there's value in that, obviously, because you're trying to win games. But in terms of the Heisman Trophy, should never have won it. When I was a voter in the early 90s and Gino Toretta was Miami's quarterback, Gino Toretta was about the 17th best player on that Miami team, but he was the quarterback and they won all the time. So the guys he was throwing to who were phenomenal and the guys who were on the defensive side who were phenomenal all got overlooked for Gino. Again, not a great college player, just the guy who was in the right place on the right team. He gets the Heisman because he's, quote, the MVP because he's the quarterback. But he wasn't the best player, not only in the country that year, but I'm telling you, I'd have to go back and look at the roster now, but I covered the games that were played against that Miami team, and he was not the best player on his team. That's what the Heisman has become. It's devalued itself. We still see sometimes those blessed years when we see the best player win it, Reggie Bush, for instance. And they're validated, but far too often we see players who are not elite college players win the award because the voters have turned it into an MVP trophy.
I agree, Mike, wholeheartedly. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all that he has because he covers the entire sports world. Buddy, I appreciate you. Enjoy your trip.
Thanks, Jim. Look for coverage from tonight's game. USA Japan in Columbus, And we'll get a tour of the exciting college football and NFL season. We'll get back to that as soon as I get back home.
Looking forward to it, brother. Enjoy your week. Appreciate you. Thanks, as always. Jim. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News joining us. More coming up. Coach Grip joins us. Lewis Moore decision coming up tomorrow. That and much more here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. Welcome back. Coach Griffith joins us now. Jim Coyle with you as always, as we are in the early part of week three of the college football season. But big news coming tomorrow for Indiana as the decision on Lewis Moore and his eligibility for the remainder of the season will be answered. He's received a temporary restraining order that has allowed him to play in the first two games. And Coach, I've got to be honest with you, I'm going to be hard pressed to think that they're now going to take that away after allowing him to play. But that's just an opinion with no backup, I'd say.
Well,
other than some common sense of looking at other precedents and many other things that seem to go further outside the bounds of the lines than anything that we're talking about here.
The NCAA is challenging where the suit was filed in Texas, and they want it quashed there, and wants Lewis to refile in Indiana because that is where he is playing. Texas.
Yeah, is he from Texas?
Well, I'm assuming that's why they filed it there, but the NCAA is saying that Texas, the venue in Texas, is the wrong venue, and this is what we're getting into, and that's what's going to happen either tomorrow or Thursday. I can't remember, but that's what this court case is mostly about. We'll find out. It's totally asinine that we're talking about a kid's eligibility 2 weeks into the season because there's not been a final decision made either by the courts or by the NCAA, by just like we said a couple weeks ago, is you can't, you know, all of a sudden start changing the rules of the game and moving the goalpost. They actually got two more suits on the same matter from one kid, another kid at Vanderbilt for the exact same thing. So they're getting sued right and left on this thing, and I'm not sure what's all going to occur, but I'm like you. I feel it very hard to believe that all of a sudden they're going to rule him ineligible after playing two straight weeks and saying that he was eligible and then kind of flipping it and going, oh, no, he's ineligible right now. So, it's one of those things I just can't see that occurring now that they've done all this.
Yeah, and there are so many other precedents, like I said, that I just shake my head. Yeah. And then there's a lot of the language and verbiage that the judge has used. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to think that's going to be hard-pressed for him to lose that. Also, Texas, very football-friendly state. And then Indiana is the home of the NCAA, so I can imagine that's and very conservative, but Texas is also conservative. So,
well, yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
There's so many precedents out there right now, whether or not they're the same in the eyes of the law in some cases now is irrelevant because it's all about perception. If you got the kid at Vanderbilt, the quarterback Pavia, playing because he got his additional year back, and in theory it's the same thing that Lewis Moore is saying. Yeah,
but I think the difference between those that the NCAA was fighting was that Pavia was still within his five-year window that the NCAA had set, and Moore was like 6 months out of it. But who cares? You've got guys that are in their sixth and seventh year. So
right.
Doesn't that in and of itself blow that out?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So you're saying that, well, we'll make exceptions for this, but not that. And right. I just don't, I just don't see how anybody's going to buy that. Coach Griffith is with us. Jim Coyle as well. Appreciate you joining us as we're in the early parts of this week, of week two, heading into with a lot of things coming up. Talked earlier about the spitting.
What the hell is with the spitting, man?
I have no idea. This whole thing in the NFL is absolutely stupid on these, and why these players would feel it's like seeing 2 9-year-olds on the playground. You know what I mean? They get mad at one another. Instead of throwing punches, they just start spitting on each other. It just doesn't make any sense why this is even occurring. I think the NFL is just going to have to change the rule in some respects. If you outside of being ejected out of the game for it and penalized, maybe they need to suspend them for one game and take a little bit more money out of their pocketbook. And maybe that puts the stifling of, stop to this nonsense.
That's what I said earlier. I go, why not start fining these college players for certain egregious things? They've got the money. Hit them in the pocketbook.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I mean, but you're seeing the thing, and it's like the NFL is in the same boat as well. As there were like 2 or 3 incidences of this past weekend. I mean, one involved Dak Prescott, and in that game with Philadelphia, where one of the defensive linemen for Philly actually, you could see it on TV, and it was very. It was just like, what is going on? And I do think you're correct in that regard. And I don't know if this is a question that's been asked, whether it's a question that gets asked by, Insignetti at some point in time about, is there a fine process now that the players are being paid? So like you said, if a kid gets ejected for X, Y, or Z, is there a fine schedule that the College Sports Commission or the NCAA is following, or is there a fine schedule for players doing things stupid on campus? They come late to a meeting, or they find out they're skipping class, or they get involved in the extracurriculars on a Saturday evening. And, those type of things. Is there, what is the parameters now that these kids are being paid a pretty good chunk of money? And how does that message get driven home? And like you said, and I agree totally, is you got to hit them in the money butt, the pocketbook.
Got to hit them in the buddy butt, baby. Hit them in the buddy butt. Someone asked about the chances for Fernando Mendoza and the Heisman. I was talking about the Heisman earlier. The Heisman is going to be an uphill battle for Fernando, but if you can beat Illinois, then go on the road and beat Iowa and or Oregon or Penn State, changes that immensely. And if you lose against Oregon on the road and have a good showing, that will change that, but it's going to take great games and great wins, because although winning should not play a factor unless you're a reason that the win didn't happen. But if you have a game where you throw for 300 yards and 3 or 4 touchdowns and no picks and your team doesn't win, that's not your fault unless you've thrown some critical INTs. So I don't care if they actually win or lose the game. It's depending. Was the loss on them? Did the defense give up something? Who cares? That has no bearing on what this guy does. So, but it's an uphill battle because he's not even being mentioned, which ironically it's a little funny since you've got people like Mel Kiper Jr. touting him as a potential high NFL draft pick. So I'm not getting the absolute refusal to see that, but it's just the same old, man. If you look at the guys that are at the top, they're from Oklahoma and this and that and the other thing. And one of the things that was mentioned that this Mateer had, he had the biggest win of the week. I don't care. Right. He didn't have the win. Damn, he helped. But how about the defense? What did the defense do? Was the defense more important for that win, or who? Each game is different, and just because a team wins the game, it doesn't make it the result of the Heisman candidate.
Yeah, I'm not sure what all goes into these early on mentions and things of that nature. whether it's behind the scenes with agents and things of that nature, trying to drum up notoriety or, you know, mentions and things of that, but the type of thing. But, you know, with Fernando, he has got a live arm. There's no question about it. He can get the ball in and out of his hands. That was evident on Saturday. His rhythm was much better, and he felt more comfortable within the offense. It didn't look like he was struggling and, you know, trying to press things. But all this accolades about Heisman Trophy and first-round draft pick and things of that nature, I just say let's tap the brakes a little bit on that. Yeah, he just came from Cal, who had a very iffy type of year. And, yeah, he threw for a bunch of yardage in that. But let's give him a chance to just play the game and then make the evaluations on those things at the appropriate time. Like you said, you know, if things go well, then those things will start ramping up and that so forth and so on. But, you know, this coming out saying that he's a first round draft pick or he's this or that, you've only got a half a year of that of game film on the kid in the college ranks. And, you know, let's tap the brakes some and not get too ahead of our skis a little bit on some of this stuff, because, you know, this is his first full year of truly starting as a college football quarterback.
Speaking of Kurt Cignetti, he met with the media yesterday in his regular Monday presser as the Hoosiers head into week 3 of the college football season and their final non-conference game against an Indiana State team that is vastly improved for what they have been. I'm not saying that this is going to be a great game, but at least it should be a game that gives Indiana a little more challenges. That's what you want. You want to be at least challenged on both sides of the ball, because this is your last quote-unquote tune-up game before a top 10 prime time matchup with the Illini, who are ranked number 9 in both polls and announced yesterday that game, coach, will be on 7:30 on NBC. WNBC. Next
big
week.
Saturday so kickoff or whatever they
big
call it.
Night, Indiana and the Big Ten getting some primetime exposure. Now, you want to talk about elevating Heisman chatter and poll chatter? This is the opportunity. You do it in prime time against a top 10 team. So it's going to be a good opportunity for Kurt Cignetti and the rest of the Hoosiers, as the nation's going to be watching, man. Great, great evening. It's going to be an incredible weather. Well, that's a little far out. I was looking at this week. But hopefully this weather holds like it has been, and it would be just an incredible, incredible all-around day in Bloomington. So we'll see. Let's hear what Kurt Cignetti had to say yesterday in his opening remarks.
Okay, Saturday definitely took a step forward, but it was far from clean. Still a lot of areas of improvement, must improve. You always have to improve. But, you know, I don't think, you know, the players want to look at the score and feel like, yep, okay, we're there, because we're definitely not. I mean, defensively, we gave up 9 plays of 15 yards or more. I mean, they had drives of 63, 64, 44, and 50 consecutively. And we had a number of missed assignments, poor alignments to fastballs, particularly in the middle of the field where they're going fast. We're not aligned correctly. And really the play of the game is Jamari Sharp's strip, where it's 28-9 in the second half, and they get a big play. And if they go in and score, it's going to be 28-16. He makes a great play. And on the very next play, we run the reverse for a touchdown, so it's 35-9. But on that particular play, the ball's in the middle of the field. They come out and empty 3x2, and we set the strength wrong. And then they motion to 4x1, and we got guys all over the place. And so, you know, we got to do a better job of that. But I do think the last two teams we've played in terms of getting aligned are some of the bigger challenges we'll face this year because of their tempo, particularly this last team who had a lot of They could go extremely fast, and then they had some oddball formations you had to adjust to. Offensively, you know, we still had six or seven missed opportunities that we need to convert on. On the plus side, it was good to go 7 for 7 touchdowns in the red area on offense. Defense, the first four series, 3 and out. And the last four series, they had 1 first down. We won the turnover ratio 2-0. We had 14 TFLs on defense. Teams were good. All the kickoffs were out of the end zone. We blocked a punt. We had a 35-yard return. So things to build on, got to get better, and it's an early game Friday night.
Yeah, Kurt, when you talk about things that need to be cleaned up from the first few games, I guess how many lingering issues have you seen, I guess, between both games? Like, are more of these kind of, you know, common issues between, you know, both Old Dominion and Kennesaw State, or just kind of, you know, individual things that have popped up one game, different?
I think every game is different, without a doubt. And, you know, you come out of this game and you can say, okay, offense improved in certain areas. Teams was still very consistently good. And defense gave up too many chunk plays. And they had an opportunity for more chunk plays that they didn't execute. We also had a lot of nice defensive explosives and TFLs. But, you know, we missed tackles at linebacker more. We had some misfits. Safeties were out of position quite a few times. So got to get lined up quicker. Communication's got to be cleaner. And there needs to be a little bit more attention to detail in our preparation in the back end.
Kurt, how do you talk about some of the tackles for loss? I think it was 14, and there was certainly kind of a lot of pressure, a lot of penetration. Mm-hmm. Do you see some of the, like, what's the difference in your mind between maybe some, when you see those chunk plays, it being structural issues within the defense, or it being just individual missed assignments or bad footwork, or just
it's always somebody not doing what they're supposed to do, always. Whether it's a missed tackle, poor read, a poor fit, you know, an alignment issue.
With the receivers, they had some drops in the first half, it looked like, and it was a couple the previous week. How's kind of the chemistry with Fernando kind of developing with them, and what have you kind of seen from the group as a whole after the first 2 weeks?
No, I thought the pass game took a step forward. I think, you know, I'm not a stat guy, but I think it was 21 or 28 for about 285 touchdowns. That's pretty good. There was one drop, true drop, EJ on the RPO, you know, routine play. If you're talking about Surratt's, that's one where Fernando had a guy in his face and ball was a little behind him. It was hard to see on tape. You know, tough catch it looked like. So we took a step forward. I mean, there's no denying that.
There's some of what Coach Cignetti had to say yesterday, and we'll move forward this week as they get their final tune-up with the Sycamores, an improved Sycamore team, but they're still giving up those chunk plays, and that has to be worrisome when you're doing that against teams that obviously don't have the athletes that the teams you're going to be playing have. Bigger, faster, stronger. And that is something they have got to get cleaned up. It was not an issue last year, but in these first couple of games has shown their head there, Coach.
Yeah, they gave up 8 on Saturday. The fortunate thing is Indiana's offense had 16, so they were 2-1 on big plays. But you are correct. A big play like that, they're giving up against a team like Illinois or Oregon, or in that case, even Iowa, those are touchdowns. You know, these are not, you know, these are the things that get you beat quicker than anything, is when you give up these chunk plays, whether it's a run or a pass. And like you said, Indiana was very, very good about this last year. Now, the only thing that happened Saturday when it came to the chunk plays, the very next play, Indiana automatically got Kennesaw State off schedule. They had a TFL, you know, things of that nature that took the, you know, kind of took the win out of the sails of the big play of the big play. But like he said, and I talked about this last night on the tailgate, is that the secondary is not getting lined up. They're helter skelter back there, and there's no reason for it. And you know, you got some guys that are not fitting properly in their gaps, especially those, you know, guys that are coming in from the secondary. That's got to be your last line defense on a play that clears the front seven. So they do have some things they definitely have to work on. And even on the play of the game that he referenced there with Sharp, that was a blown coverage. And he was just fortunate enough that he was able to regain some of the separation, that he was able to make a heck of a play there. And like Coach Signetti said, you know, the kid doesn't fumble it. They score the game, go in and score there, and Kennesaw State's going to be smelling blood because it's now within a one-score game. So you can see how things can turn on a dime quickly in a game like that, and how that ultimately can go be your demise on a Saturday afternoon if you don't get those things rectified. And the one thing that they've done real well this year so far, Jim, is special teams. Their special teams play through the first 2 weeks have been phenomenal. And that's
having to use a backup punter right now.
Right. And, you know, they've blocked one Saturday. You'd almost say they blocked two, because that one against that was ruled a rough or run into the kicker against Old Dominion, that was a crock because it was tipped by Jones. But
I still don't understand. I've never seen that called. How can you call that when the ball? Oh, yeah. I remember someone said that they didn't actually touch the ball, that they got to his foot. But does that even matter?
Well, on replay, I thought the trajectory of the ball changed by Jones getting a hand on it. Now, if a ball's tip and you run into the kicker, it's too bad. He loses all protections. Now,
right.
If they, in their mindset, view that ball wasn't tipped, and there's no replay to validate one way or the other, and maybe there was and they just didn't see it, it is a running into the kicker if you touch the kicker in that regard. But needless to say, special teams has been huge for 2 weeks. They've gotten Brady a touchdown on a 91-yarder. He's had a big return on Saturday again on that 30-yard punt return. And both of these weeks, the special teams has either scored or set up scores by the offense, which is huge. And so that's one area that they got to continue to improve upon, because that can be a huge, huge differential in a game when you're playing talented teams like Illinois or Oregon in that regard. But the secondary's got to start getting their, you know what, together, because their alignment problems is going to be, you just can't have that on a Saturday afternoon. And I got news for Sig, Oregon's going to go faster when they see that type of play can give a confusion to Indiana's defense. So they better be ready to face some of that coming up here, or they're gonna regret not getting it in, nip it in the buds right now.
AP poll out, both polls out yesterday, mm-hmm. Coaches poll and the AP poll. The Big Ten, three of the top four teams, but the SEC gets 11 teams in overall. Indiana or the Big Ten with six in there total, with besides Ohio State and Penn State at the top, and then Oregon at number four. You've got the Illini at number nine, Indiana 22, Michigan 23rd. I think Oregon might be the best team in the country, and much less the best team in the Big Ten right now.
I agree. I don't think there's anything that you can look at them right now and say they're not. They're playing at a high clip. They got a quarterback that's phenomenal. They got weapons that can hurt you in run game or pass game, and their defense is playing lights out right now. And I just think they are, as you just stated, the best team not only in the Big Ten but in the country when it comes to that type of evaluation when you're looking at it. as far as AP polls go, I mean, they might as well take that thing and throw it out the window, because it's so discombobulated in terms of how what is occurring versus one team versus the other. There's not a formatted formula across the board that's being employed with that. When you look at some of that stuff, you know, a close win by one team, they drop a spot. Ole Miss beats Kentucky barely, and they gain spots. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me that there's an equal distribution of allocation across the board when you talk about SEC versus the rest of the Big Ten or ACAC or Big 12 or however you want to look at it. So I've always said, and it's not going to happen, but I just always think that after the third week of the season, when everybody's played their non-conference games, that's when you can probably get a true evaluation of who your top 10 are versus, and also then your next, you know, 12 or 13. Because you've got a good set of data there to, you know, truly evaluate, you know, those teams in the same limelight, even though their schedule was stronger than them. So, okay. But again, I think you need some more data to really come up with a true top 25 and essentially a top 10.
And no doubt Coach Griff with us right now, Jim Coyle here as well. The Big Ten, it's with that just said, it's hard to really ask this question, but who are some of the teams in the Big Ten that have kind of piqued your interest so far?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at Rutgers, what they've been able to do, I think they're off to a really good start. They seem, you know, I think they're a team that right now is gaining confidence. You know, you look at the Miami-Ohio game, they thoroughly controlled that ball game. And when I look at that one compared to a Wisconsin struggled a little bit against the Miami of Ohio, where Rutgers did not, even though Wisconsin is also 2-0. But they go to Alabama this week, which will be a great gauge to see where Wisconsin is at and where a Alabama, who is the king of, you know, the king all be all of the SEC, and see how that game matches up. Does Wisconsin play them tough?
I think Wisconsin gets smoked.
Well, and they may, and that's fine. But I'm just saying there's a game there that, you know, Wisconsin did get smoked a year ago by Alabama. And we'll find out there. But I think Rutgers is a team that's kind of piqued my interest a little bit in where they're at. As you know, even Maryland, I think, is a team that has turned the corner compared to where they were a year ago. And, you know, the vibe coming out of Maryland's a lot more positive this year than it was a year ago at the same time. So those are two teams that have done pretty good in that arena of interest. And we're going to find out about USC and Purdue this week as well. And I think that will be a good gauge of where USC is at. And maybe even with Purdue, you know, where are they at in their regrouping and rebuild this year? Because right now they get a lot of positive energy coming out of West Lafayette when it comes to Purdue.
Yeah, I'm not. I'll disagree with you on Rutgers. They haven't done anything to grab my attention. USC, on the other hand, has. But of course, we expect them to do that. Lincoln Riley is. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say his seat is getting hot, but there has to be some heat there. I mean,
oh, it's hot.
They got to start doing something, man.
Yeah, it's hot. It's been hot for the last 2 years. It went from warm to hotter and hotter.
But I also think that they are a team that's going to be a dangerous team this year, definitely to look out for. So far, they beat Abilene Christian 35-7, but then they only beat, how the hell did I get up on Tulsa? I got the wrong schedule. I was going to say that doesn't seem right. So they open up their first two games. Missouri State, they win 73-13 right off the bat. Then they put 59-20 game up on Georgia Southern. So their offense is rolling right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And they play at Purdue this week. So it is going to be interesting to see how that goes. But USC has looked good to me. I'm still surprised by Maryland's ability to mm-hmm. play as well as they have played and losing what I know that they have lost. That's been kind of impressive to me what Mike Locksley has been able to get done so far with this season. 39-7 win over FAU, and then they beat Northern Illinois 20-9. They play Towson this week. No, yeah, a lot of Big Ten teams like that that they're not catching grief about their schedule. Funny. But let's see. Other than that, I looked down through here and Michigan State, they're definitely better. I'll tell you, the team's not on Indiana's schedule that I don't think you want to go play there this year is Washington. They have looked better. Mm-hmm. And you get out there in the Puget Sound, baby, it's loud out there. That's going to be a dangerous place for teams to play. And we were talking earlier about this, and there was someone that I said, look out for this game coming up. And who was that have been? Let's see. Illinois. I think that they have to go to Washington, mm-hmm. if that is correct. And that is going to be a stiff test. Other than that, Illinois ends the season against Oregon. Let's see. They play Michigan, but they don't have a daunting schedule either. Illinois does not have a daunting schedule. Someone does. I was talking about a minute ago. Plays Ohio State, Penn State, and Oregon. That's like Indiana being in the old Big Ten East.
Yeah, right. You know, I wished in some respects that the Big Ten would have kept the.
Don't you say it.
Kept the schedule the same.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say the word divisions.
No. Kept the schedule the same for 2 years so that Indiana would have gone to Nebraska and to Washington this year, because I think that would have been a better schedule, in the sense that, you know, it may have put to rest some of the grumblings of the years past about how bad Washington was or how bad Nebraska was. Because right now, just like you said, Nebraska's on a roll. Dana Holgerson's got that offense running high. Riola just threw for 300 plus yards Saturday.
Gets Akron.
And their defense has been playing well as well. And you mentioned Washington and that new quarterback who played against Indiana a year ago, came in that game, and what they did. Now, Indiana did keep Michigan State, and that game, like you said, you know, they beat Boston College. That's a really good win for them. You know, that's an ACC team that they beat in double overtime, and Boston College actually beat Michigan State a year ago. So you can see the growth there under Coach Smith, and I just really have a lot of respect for him, because he's gone to places and won where it's not easy, like Oregon State. And so you can win out at Oregon State. I got a feeling he's going to have success at Michigan State in the Big Ten, just because it's a better footprint in terms of what they can recruit. And they got a good D coordinator in Rossi. So, I mean, again, that's another team, like you said, is a kind of piquing everybody's interest because of what they've been able to do here the first 2 weeks.
A team that is seasoned is in perilous situation already now after that loss to Oklahoma. The Michigan Wolverines dropped down to 23rd in the AP top 25 poll, and they have to go to Nebraska without Sharon Moore, their head coach. Will be the second. They play Central Michigan this week. He'll serve one of his suspension games this week, and then at Nebraska on September 20th, that could be big, because if Michigan loses their second game in their fourth of the season, buddy, that's gonna. Then they've got to go to USC. They play Washington at home. And then other than that, they've got Ohio State.
It's interesting.
They've got a decent, easy schedule. I mean, at Nebraska, if you didn't have the coaching situation, wouldn't be a big deal. Wisconsin, USC, I will put that up there. Washington, if that one was on the road, I would definitely go with Washington.
Well, what's interesting there is the interim head coach for Michigan, when Sharon Moore is suspended, is no other than Biff.
Biff Pogge,
who was at Charlotte when he brought his team in here against Indiana a year ago. And what's interesting there, you know, he's known for having the cutoff sleeves that he likes to wear on the sideline. And Michigan's already came out and said, no, he will be wearing a regular polo shirt like everyone else on the sidelines.
A normal human.
Yeah, but you know, that's an interesting dynamic, losing their head coach. And it'll be interesting because, you know, I think Michigan right now, they're reeling a little bit. They found out that Bryce Underwood is human. You know, he's a freshman. They found out he's a freshman and hard to go play Oklahoma with a true freshman back there. But you're correct. I mean, it's going to throw a dynamic into the fray, so to speak, with their head coach not being there. And, you know, I think sometimes that gets to be made more out of than it rarely actually should be in some respects, because
that Nebraska game is going to be a tipping point for Michigan's season.
No question, because Nebraska's playing well right now and they're gaining confidence, you know, each and every week. And you know, Raiola's a year older. They found an offense that fits his strengths. And, you know, there's a lot of positive energy there. And you just can tell by watching Coach Rule's presser yesterday, and which I love because the Big Ten Network plays all the coaches' press conferences, you know, on Monday. So you get a chance to hear all of them. And there's a sense of an air of confidence, let's say, in Nebraska right now. And you're correct. That could be a pivotal game in Michigan's schedule moving forward, because right now they're going to be hard pressed. They're going to have to win and not lose many games. And if they would lose to Nebraska, that will give them a bad mark on their report card.
Only four Big Ten teams have lost a game so far this season. Of course, most of those have been against non-con teams. The game, Iowa's 1-1, but of course that loss came to ranked Iowa State. Michigan 1-1, and that, of course, to a top or a heavily ranked Oklahoma team. Northwestern, that's Northwestern, and then UCLA. They might as well just get comfortable there at the bottom of the standings, because I don't see that changing from what I've seen. Kalen DeBoer, I think he's going to take full advantage of the matchup with Wisconsin to try to put some separation between all the talk that has come out with that. It just hasn't gotten going just yet. And I'm a little surprised, because he is such a phenomenal coach, and it's not like he forgot to coach all of a sudden. This dude is a winner. It's hard to – Alabama is a program that forever was going in this direction. Mm-hmm. It's like a gigantic freighter ship that, one of those gigantic cargo ships that are 8 football fields long.
Right. Well,
those don't turn on a dime. And Alabama football is a cargo ship. So you're changing an entire culture there. And I don't mean culture as far as winning, losing. I mean, as type of athletes, type of offense, the style of things. It's hard to turn that ship.
Right. And I think, even Saban came out on College Game Day and, you know, said the best thing that Alabama can do right now is support Kalen DeBoer, you know, and that goes a long way, you know, in that regard. And, You know, and I think even Saban said some of the things that, you know, reminded the faithful that when he took over Alabama, their first loss was an embarrassing loss to Louisiana Monroe, who Alabama just destroyed this week. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's hard to follow a legend. I mean, that's probably one of the, you know, everybody's going to take that job because it's Alabama and they're going to pay you well. But to follow somebody like Nick Saban there's nobody that's going to live up to what Saban means in Alabama. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I hope Kellen, you know, rights the ship, which I believe he will. And he's got, you know, his people in place. And for the most part, this is just his second year in terms of recruiting and things of that nature. And people forget he basically had to replace a roster that, you know, took off after Saban announced he was, you know, going bye-bye. You know, the quarterback at Ohio State, he was a Alabama commit. And when Nick Saban announced his retirement, that's when he opened his recruiting up, and that's how he ended up at Ohio State. So I think the board will get it going. And like you said, he's too good a coach, and hopefully the fans there will, you know, support that, you know, that team. And for the most part, they do. It's just the loud mouth that you get on Feinbaum and things of that nature that make things miserable half the time for everyone.
Yeah.
as well as funny.
You know, looking at Michigan, their quarterback, he's thrown for almost 400 yards in two games. And his QBR is only 46.8.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's bad.
Not good.
That's not good. And Michigan made their way through the season last year with defense mainly. They didn't have a lot of offense last year either. Hey, we've got to take a break. Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Shannon Griffith with us. Jim Coyle along the way as well. We've got to just to get these messages in. We'll be back with more right after these. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. Jim Coyle with you. Coach Griff with us as well. Getting ready for week three of the college football season. And who's playing on Thursday this week? What are the game? North Carolina State, Wake Forest. The only Thursday matchup that's on ESPN. So an ACC matchup there. North Carolina State 7.5-point favorite. Then, of course, the Sycamores of Indiana State come to Bloomington for a 6:30 BTN matchup in Bloomington. Also, Syracuse playing Colgate. Houston Colorado goes to Houston. Kansas State to Arizona. That'll be on Fox at 9. And then later on, New Mexico at UCLA at 10. And man, that if they were to lose that game, and that's very possible because New Mexico played Michigan to open the season, mm-hmm. in which they lost 34-17. Pretty respectable. You put 17 points up against Michigan's defense, that looks pretty good. Then they beat Idaho State 32-22. So I would, I think I'm going to take New Mexico in that all day and every day. Even though it's at New Mexico, I don't think that much matters in that stadium that they play in that has nobody in it.
Yeah, that's one of those programs that's in a tough spot in terms of football powers in high school. There's not many there in New Mexico to draw from, so they're kind of in the world of no man's land. I think the portal will help them immensely on how much they'd be able to draw from it. I don't know, but they got a good coach out there now that I think will do well. And he's kind of one of those guys that likes to gamble a little bit and have fun and trick plays and things of that nature. He ran a great one against Michigan. I don't know if you saw it, but it was an awesome, awesome call and an awesome play that they ran for and actually scored a touchdown for him. So, very, very creative offensively there at New Mexico with what they do. So, it'll be interesting to see how they handle the limelight a little bit, but, again, Indiana with Indiana State, you know, Coach Mallory coming back into Memorial Stadium, where he spent a very long period of his lifetime here in Bloomington under Coach Bill Mallory, of course. And like you said, they've won two ball games. They've scored about 40 points on average and only given up about 19 on average for the first 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, Indiana will, again, it's not about who you play. It's about them addressing the issues that Coach Cignetti has highlighted the last 2 weeks when it comes to their efficiency on defense and on offense and stacking the wins, but stacking wins where you see the improvement being made in those areas that they've been deficient. That is the key to this game against Indiana State on Friday, is what he talked about and whether or not you're seeing the results of them addressing those issues, because they don't have any more, you know, games to mess around with, because we're going to be jumping right back into Big Ten play. And from the word go, it's 900 miles an hour with the schedule that Indiana has the first 3 weeks.
Oh, absolutely. And the first 3 weeks are going to determine the value of their season without question. Those first three conference games, a lot of value right there. And if they can get through that 5-1, man, then you come out of that with a home games again, second year in a row. After their first six games, their first two on the backside, home games. That was the same as it was last year. Mm-hmm. So if they can get to 5-1, which is very doable, then you look at 5-6-7-1. You've got a tricky game at Maryland, but I still think that puts you at 8-1. And then by then, you will have, if you're rolling at 8-1 at that point with just a loss to an Oregon team that I think is the best in the country, but that would give you a top 10 win, a substantial road win at Iowa. And then that'll lead up to that game at Penn State later on in the season. But that will have given Indiana rise in the polls, rise in respectability, and another shot at the CFP, which a 10-2 mark is minimum is what it's going to take for that to happen. And that's not a guarantee, but I would be hard pressed to think that a 10-2 record again with losses only to say Oregon and Penn State, who are two of the top three teams in the country. And a top 10 win that would already be more than what they had last year. So,
yeah, no question. And, you know, already when you think about it, Indiana, you know, this schedule that they've got with Michigan State having been, you know, looks that like they're vastly improved. And you've already mentioned the Illinois, Iowa, Oregon State game, Oregon game, because Michigan State comes in there in that equation very quickly as well. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic with this Hoosier team. And like you said, if everyone else holds serve and Indiana goes and plays those teams at their peak and comes away with wins, their resume will be in some respects undeniable at that point in time. So we'll have to see. I think Mendoza's this week will be a great to see where he's at peaking as in control of this offense. And we'll see what all happens at the end of the day, but he is making some plays now, and I thought there was a big progress in his game on Saturday from week one to week two.
No line on the Indiana State Indiana game right now, and I don't know that will be forthcoming, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they may have blacklisted that game in Vegas because it's just they just can't put a line on it that they can stand by in terms of,
you would have to put too many points up and to get that. Yeah, that's good. Hey, the college commission that is overseeing the NIL deals. We'll talk more about this tomorrow, but they have sent a correction Friday that it overstated the value of the NIL deals. It has cleared by more than $40 million in a data set. It made it public earlier. The commission blamed a clerical error provided by Deloitte Touche, which had developed the platform. NIL go. The most jarring of the errors, the total value of the deals cleared was $35 million instead of the $79 million previously announced. So
that's a got that to deal with. So that's a clerical. A little bit.
I wish they'd have one of those errors in my bank account. But,
absolutely.
Coach, that'd cannot be... thank you enough as always, man. I'm
you got a partner. Doing
this again. And looking forward to week continues. Enjoy your enjoy the rest of your day, man.
Absolutely, sir. You have a good one too.
And enjoy the rest of the day to you and each and every one of you out there. Thanks to Mike DeCourcy as well, including all of you guys for joining us today on the program. We're back to do it again tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.